Hey, hello, hi, welcome back to the show. Boy, I just keep doing it, don't I? I just keep going. We've been making this podcast for 5 years now, almost. In November, it'll be 5 years. That's crazy. Whatever. Just keep it rolling. All right. Thanks for sticking with us. Thanks for always listening. Now I've had all of the Archer siblings on the show. Okay. The original four. I've got siblings-in-law. I've got my sister Kathy from Micronesia. That's a whole other story. Maybe I'll have her on the show sometime. I've got my brother Cyril from France. That's a whole other story. Maybe I'll have him on the show sometime. But the original four, the core four, Allison, Adam, Anthony, and Austin. Now Allison, Adam, and Anthony have all been on the show. Anthony is my guest this week. I've been asking him for a while now what he wants to talk about. Anthony and I like to talk about sports a lot, and he was like, I don't want to talk about sports. He came up with this idea with this topic, and I think that it wound up working out really, really well, and it was one of my favorite conversations I've ever had with my brother Anthony, if I'm being completely honest, and I'm glad that it's recorded and stored for posterity. One thing I want to talk about before we get into the show here, I had a weird experience recently, like a very surreal experience. You know, sometimes I listen to podcasts. I make a podcast because I enjoy podcasts. I like listening to people talk, and I'm pretty basic, and I'm a film nerd, and I'm fascinated by celebrity culture in that basic way, but also because these are people who have like achieved something that I think I'm in the hunt to try to do with my life, and I'm interested in what their journey looked like. And so I like to listen to shows like Smartless and WTF and, you know, Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend and Armchair Expert. I like listening to famous people talk to other famous people, okay? And occasionally, and I'm embarrassed to admit this, but this is, you know, I get vulnerable on People Pleaser with Austin Archer, and I tell you all the truth. I keep it 100. I keep it on the level with you. Occasionally, there have been times where I'll be driving in my car, listening to Marc Maron talk to somebody, and my brain will go like, now what would it be like if you were in the chair across from Marc, and if you were the guest on WTF? And my brain will start drifting into fantasy land. And I have a very strong vocal inner critic in my head that is really quick to jump in there and go, hey, shut up! You shut up, knock it off. Nope. So my brain goes, there's a part of my brain that likes to fantasize and likes to daydream that goes, ooh, but what if you were on Armchair Expert, or what if you were the guest on Smartless? And then my inner critic brain comes in and goes, you shut up, you knock it off. That's never going to happen. That's so embarrassing that you would even think that thought, that thought would even arise in your brain, is so embarrassing that you are that lacking in self-awareness that you are not aware that will never be you. You are never going to be a guest on one of these shows. You're just going to listen in your car, okay? And shut up. You don't need to fantasize about, you don't need to get lost in these stupid delusions of grandeur. And I had an experience recently where I think that inner critic a little bit had to like pipe down and take a seat and eat some humble pie. It wasn't a full on, it's like, yeah, I'm like, spoiler alert, I'm not a guest on WTF or Armchair Expert or Smartless or Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend. That has not happened. But who was a guest on Armchair Expert recently is Kevin Costner. And it's just, it's so fascinating. Like, the episode starts with Dax talking to Monica about how he was genuinely starstruck to be in Kevin Costner's presence. And this is, you know, and like, Dax always is very effusive with his compliments of the guests, but it's not every day that Dax is like, okay, this person kind of shook me a little bit. Like, I was nervous to be in front of this person. And Costner is one of those people who's like a celebrity to celebrities. He's a legend. He's a guy who's just been doing it for so long that a lot of people of a certain generation are like, no, but you've been famous my whole life. You've always been here. And I even got to witness that firsthand, you know, being in these movies with that he directed, that like there were famous people on set every single day. There were people that I've been watching in movies my whole entire life on set every single day. And he's still the guy that like everyone's here for him. Everyone's excited to be in a Kevin Costner movie. Giovanni Ribisi is excited to be on set in a Kevin Costner movie. Luke Wilson is excited to be on set in a Kevin Costner Western. Sienna Miller, like Kevin is the draw. And it's the same way for Dax and Monica. So Dax is talking about that. And I'm like, I know what you're talking about, Dax. And I've never related to an intro of a podcast more because I literally have firsthand experience with what Dax is saying. But anyway, here's where the here's where my inner critic needed to sort of eat some humble pie. This inner critic that's been telling me for years, don't you dare drift off into dreamland world or fantasy world where you could potentially one day be the guest on one of these shows. That'll never happen. You shut up. You shut up so much. You shut your face. I'm sitting there listening to Kevin Costner talk to Dax and Monica. And, you know, Kevin's still, even I've been to dinner at Kevin's house more than four times. You know, I've had one-on-one meetings with him, just me and him, more than three times. I have spent time with this man, a lot of time over the last couple of years, and he's still to me very, very big. He's Kevin Costner. It's still it when I'm listening to him on Armchair Expert, my brain doesn't register that this is a man that I know and that I've spent time with and that I've worked with. He still registers in my brain as like Robin Hood or Superman's dad. But I'm sitting there listening to the episode, and Kevin's doing the thing that guests always do on the show. He's talking about his work, and he's talking about his process, and he's talking about making Horizon, and he's talking about the way that he works with actors, and Dax is talking about the movie because Dax has watched the movie, and Dax is talking, you know, and they're having this conversation where Kevin's like breaking down scenes and talking about how he'll pull actors over to Video Village and let them watch playback. For those who don't know, playback in movie speak is like, it's when you do the scene, you shoot the scene, and then you watch it back on a monitor. And they didn't always have playback in Hollywood, obviously. Like, they didn't always have instantaneous playback. So the conversation starts with Dax asking Kevin if he had playback on Dances with Wolves, if back then they had the ability to go to Video Village and look at a monitor. And it's really important when an actor is directing the movie, because the actor is in the scene a lot of the time and needs to be able to go back and watch what was shot to make sure that it works. But a lot of times on a lot of movie sets, on a lot of TV sets, actors are not invited to Video Village to watch playback. It's just sort of like the director and the director of photography and maybe the first AD and a few other people, the script supervisor, who are back there watching playback. And for whatever reason, there's like this barrier where it's just like the actors, you stay on set. It's going to, and I mean, what Kevin said perfectly in the podcast is he said, a lot of people think it wastes time to invite actors to Video Village. He goes, I think it speeds things up. And I agree with him. In two movies, shooting exteriors primarily in the desert in the middle of the summer, we never missed a day. We always made our day. Now, that's another film industry term. Did we make our day? You have a certain amount of pages that you need to shoot every day, and sometimes you don't make your day. Sometimes you just run out of time. You run out of sunlight, especially if you're shooting outside. There are just a limited amount of hours in the day where you're going to have the correct light, and things can mess that up. Cloud cover can mess that up. Unexpected weather can mess that up. In two movies, we never missed a day, and I attribute that to Kevin Costner and his process and to our incredible first AD, Phil. But Kevin said a lot of people think it slows things down to invite actors to watch playback, because think about it, the actors are out on the set working, and if you have everybody walk off the set and walk to Video Village and watch playback and then go back, it seems like it takes more time. The reason why he thinks it actually speeds things up is it shows, rather than having to explain to the actors what they did wrong in the last take or what broke down, you just call them over and go, watch this, and then go, see how you're hidden behind that thing? I need you not hidden behind that thing. And then you just know as the, oh, okay, I can fix that. And I think it does speed things up, and also it makes me as an actor feel more involved. Like every time Kevin invites me over and says, hey, tell Austin to come over here, I want to show him something, and I get called over to Video Village to watch playback with Kevin, it's the best. I love it. I feel like we're teammates. Like he's pulling me over and he's going to show me the shot. He's going to say, okay, here's what's working in the shot and here's what's not working in the shot. And we're going to like collaborate on the next shot. It's amazing. But anyway, he's explaining this to Dax and Monica, and I'm listening like a fanboy of film and like a fanboy of the film industry. And all of a sudden it clicks in my brain. I'm like, hey, they're talking about you, man. Not hypothetical you, literal you. Dax and Monica and Kevin are talking about you on Armchair Expert right now. What he's explaining to them, bringing actors over to Video Village to show them playback on his movie Horizon, that's you. You are actors. That's who that is. So, you know, and now in that moment, I was like, hey, inner critic, remember how you always told me, like, shut up, you'll never even be close to this thing? Well, I may not be the guest on the show, but hey, they were talking about me on that show. Dax Shepard watched a movie that I'm in and then did an interview with the director about the movie. So that was cool. Anyway, this is my brother Anthony, everybody. He is a very sweet man, a very understated, soft-spoken man at times, and at certain times with certain things, very effusive and energetic and boisterous and funny and just a very unique person and one of my favorite people in the world. I was really, really happy to share this topic with him. Let's just get on into it, shall we? From a Blanket Fort recording studio in a one-bedroom apartment in North Hollywood, this is People Pleaser. I'm Austin Archer, and today I'm talking with my big brother, Anthony, about getting emotional. Anthony is here. What's up, Anthony? How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing great. You're repping Real Salt Lake.
Yeah, we're going to the game tonight, so.
Oh, is there season on right now?
Yeah.
What part of the season is it?
It's like middle. I think today is their halfway point.
Oh, cool. How are they doing?
They're doing great. They're in first place in the West, so.
Hell yeah. That's great. Great news. Who are they playing tonight?
They're playing Austin. Austin FC, I believe they're from Austin, Texas. So,
oh, okay, cool. Are you gonna go with your daughter?
Yep, yeah, Lizzie and I are going.
Great, amazing. How do you feel right now? Do you feel weird to be here? Do you feel nervous to be doing this?
No,
no, you don't feel nervous about like what we're gonna talk about.
I already talked to you. We already chatted about it, so. No, I mean, it's your show, but like, I guess I could say why I'm going last is like you've asked me about it. I'm always like, nobody gives a rip what I have to say. Like, why would you have me on your show? So I did approach you with kind of a more interesting idea as opposed to just let's talk about sports or whatever. There's like a million people who are talking about sports. Like, you don't need to hear from me. So I approached you with like a follow-up to one of your other episodes. So
what episode did you hear? Oh, that this idea came to you from?
Yeah. So from listening to the episode that you had with Allison, I was like, well, maybe you and I could have a interesting follow-up conversation based off of that. So.
Okay, sure. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. I remember you saying that, and that's an interesting, we can get into that. Yeah, I just wanted to probe to see how you feel doing something like this because, like, I think it's so weird that I chose to do this with my life because we're very nervous people in our family. On your wedding day, I made you throw up the morning of your wedding because you were so nervous. But I did
fart. Well, I mean, in fairness, I was getting married. Like, that was no matter how excited you are about it, it is very nerve-wracking to be like – I'm undertaking like probably one of the biggest days that I will ever have in my life. And it's happening today. So
yeah, my brother was getting ready in the bathroom and I walked into the bathroom and I farted on him like a brother would. And he was so nervous about the day that the fart caused him to throw up. But also I relate to that so hardcore because I just get – I mean I have panic attacks all the time. And when I'm really, really emotionally like volatile, any little disturbance in my internal ecosystem will send me over the edge. So that one's on
me. You know that Blade passed out while they were doing their vows, Maddie and Blade's vows, right?
Yeah, Anthony, my brother Anthony's brother-in-law, Blade, passed out at his wedding.
Because he was doing the same. He wasn't like eating and drinking because he was so nervous. Like, he was excited, obviously, but he was also very nervous. And yeah,
yeah. Yesterday I had a rehearsal.
Drink and eat.
Yeah, yesterday I'm directing and choreographing this music video with my friend Kayla. We're co-directing, co-choreographing this music video next week, and it's my first time working with professional dancers in a long time. Like, I haven't run a rehearsal with professional dancers in many years. And yesterday we had our first rehearsal, and I woke up at 5:30 a.m. because I was so anxious and I couldn't fall back asleep. And then I ate like some applesauce and some yogurt at like 7 a.m. And then I also had to play a show last night. I played music, so I didn't eat again till like 9 p.m. So I just like didn't eat all day long because I was just so gassed up on anxiety. But it was a good day. The rehearsal went well and the show went well. But I think it's funny that I choose to put myself in front of people so often when it does cause me anxiety. But I liked that you brought up this topic. I thought this is one of actually my favorite things to talk about. I am really fascinated by the different ways that people get emotional and experience emotion and like what triggers emotion in different people. I think I first became super fascinated about this. I was listening to an episode of NPR called Testosterone, and it was an episode where they were just exploring the effect of the chemical testosterone on people. And they specifically interviewed one of the people that I thought it was like the most eye-opening for me is they interviewed a transgender man who had been taking testosterone for like a year, and they asked him like, what's the difference in your life now that you're injecting testosterone into your body? And he mentioned several things that I was like, yeah, that sounds about right. But one of the things that he mentioned that I was like, oh my God, so it's not just me. And I got so curious about it after this is he was like, I used to cry almost every day. He was like, pre-transition, I cried like all the time. And he goes, now I cry like a couple times a month, maybe. And he goes, and when I cry, it's different. My face kind of scrunches up and gets tight, and it's like hard for me to talk. And like a few tears come out, like maybe two or three tears. He's like, but before testosterone, tears would just flow. And I instantly was thinking about like, yeah, every one of my female friends and every like relationship I've ever been in, when the women in my life cry, it's a very free flowing thing. And for me, when I cry, it's like everything gets really tight and it's almost like it's really painful and it's hard for it to flow out. And it doesn't happen nearly as often. And I started, as a result of listening to that episode, I started just sort of like collecting anecdotal data and collecting experiences from my friends. I would just ask people, how often do you cry? And almost uniformly, every single one of my female friends would be like, I cried earlier today. Like, they'd be like, I cry every day. And almost uniformly, every one of my guy friends, well, it varied. Some of my guy friends would be like, I cried a couple days ago. Some of my guy friends would say, I cry like once a month. My friend Kelsey's husband, Tom, could tell me the last time he cried because it was like 6 years ago. He was like, I remember I was in a work meeting and I was overwhelmed and I went to the bathroom and I cried. And it was like, this was like 6 years ago. I was like, you haven't cried in 6 years? So it definitely varies along a spectrum. But I got really curious about it. And I still am. I find it really fascinating. And you brought this up after listening to the episode with Allison. What was it in that episode that made you think about this?
No, it's like I was telling you, I don't know if I was looking for an opening, but like, it was more, like I said, you've asked me about this several times and I was always like, why? Like, I don't have anything to say. And then after I listened to that episode, I was like, oh, well, there's like something we could actually talk about. And I think also, I told you, like, it's just something that Nikki and I talk about a lot because I'm not even close to an expert. I still have a long ways to go with this, but I used to be like really bad when we first got married. I will have been married 17 years.
That's crazy.
And when we were first married, if she started crying, I would like walk into the other room. And it's like, I'm not proud of that. I'm not like touting that. I'm saying like, that was bad. And like, that's the wrong way to approach things. And, you know, that's kind of why I approached you about this is like, it's something that I know it's a weakness of mine. It's something I know I need to get better at. And it's something I'm working on. So yeah.
What do you think? I mean, have you thought about or talked about with your wife? Like, what do you think created that sensation that you were like, I need to go to the other room when she would cry?
I lack of maturity. I'm sure we'll get into this more, but like, you know, my big thing, part of why I approached you about this subject is, and this is in no way, shape or form anything about Allison being weak or anything. Like, she's one of the strongest people I've ever met in my entire life. Like, that's something that you said at the end of that episode. And I agree with that wholeheartedly. But myself being a, whatever, 10, 11 year old, when all of that stuff was going down, I vowed, you know, inside, in that moment, like, I was like, I'm always going to be strong and I'm always going to be somebody that people can look to. So, you know, I do that a lot like that. I am a very stable person. I have things together and like, I pride myself on that, but that doesn't mean that things are always okay. And like sometimes things are not okay. And I haven't always been the best at dealing with that. We're not going to talk about this or we're not going to go there because, you know, I'm strong and I'm stable. So
do you think, so just to anyone who hasn't heard the episode of my sister and a quick recap, and you could go listen to that episode. It's called Bipolar Disorder with Allison Donaldson. And, that, you know, I think the title of that episode gives you a clue into what we're talking about. But when we were boys, Anthony and I are 3 years apart. So I was like 8 years old. Anthony was 11. Our sister had a sort of mental health episode where she sort of had a dissociative detachment from reality and had to be hospitalized and was having all kinds of manic delusions of things that weren't really happening. And it was sort of our family's introduction to the reality of mental health and mental illness and what it can actually look like. And for us as young boys, I think it was an introduction to like, oh, that's a thing that can happen to you, is your brain can, you can have a disease in your brain that makes you not aware of what's objectively real anymore. I wonder, for you, do you think that there is any possibility that you were seeing our parents have to deal with that situation and you thought, I'm going to do whatever I can to not have, if I have issues with my mental health, I'm going to do whatever I can to deal with it on my own so that I don't have to, so that they can be free to help my other siblings? Do you think that was part of it?
Oh, sure. I mean, I vividly remember Dad was on he was on a call once with, I think he was like a doctor probably a doctor or somebody who is involved in her care. And he just broke down. Like, and I was just like, I was like around, I was like in the kitchen or something. He was on the phone and it was just like, wow, like this is all like, yeah. And so seeing that type of stuff, I was like, yeah, I don't want to, you know, for me, like, I'm going to be strong and like, I'm going to make sure that that doesn't happen. But that's like vowing that to yourself when you're 11 years old and you haven't become an adult and you haven't seen the realities of life. That's, you know, not really something to vow to yourself, because we do have moments of weakness or we have moments where we're challenged and, you know, we have difficult things that we're dealing with our lives. We all have that even now. Like, it doesn't matter if things are good, like there's always something going on. So
yeah. It's a really interesting response to that, to be like, I promise I'll never have an issue with mental health. And of course, as a child, you can't possibly, you know, actually understand what the ramifications of telling yourself that could be long term. But, you know, I've even been doing a lot of this work with panic disorder and trying to figure out the roots of that. And a lot of times they'll say that when you're in the middle of panic, people in the mental health field will say they'll try to talk to the version of you that had your first panic attack. And it's hard for me to pinpoint where it began. But I think about even the fact that, like, as young as 4 and 5 years old, I would be in line at like an amusement park trying to go on a roller coaster, and I would completely shut down and freak out and have to leave the line. And there's this humiliation and this shame associated with like the other kids that are my age staying in line, about to go have this fun experience. They're all going to go ride the Colossus at Lagoon or whatever, and I'm going to have to wait out another year. I'm going to have to wait till like next summer to see if I'm brave enough to do the ride again. And that's, I think sometimes that's, it's still in there, but it's interesting how that stuff can have just decades long, you know. I mean, I'm 36 years old, and I still sort of have that feeling when I'm boarding a plane. It's the same feeling of being in line for a roller coaster and being like, I got to get on the ride. I got to sit down and put the seatbelt on, but it's, I don't want to. I want to get out of line, and I want to go run and hide. And, you know,
well, it's so interesting how like they're, you know, you, for example, like you have the fear of flying. Like you don't have any issues driving. Like I, and not to say I don't drive. I drive, and I drive just fine. But like being on the freeway in particular, and like road trips, like I witnessed a horrific crash, and it ever since then it's been like something that I've always had to deal with. Like I it makes me very nervous. I get very anxious about it. And, you know, part of it, you know, I was talking to a friend about that recently, and he's like, I think you just need to drive more. And like, I did have a trip in February where my wife wasn't there. She had parent-teacher conference, and I had to drive my daughter back and forth between Mesquite and St. George probably like 10 times. And it did help. I was like, there's nobody else here. Like I have to do it. Like they're, you know, so
I think that fear of driving is a more rational fear than fear of flying. And what's weird is I think that fear of flying is more common than fear of driving. But fear of driving makes more sense. Like you are in greater danger on the freeway than you are in a plane, objectively. I think that like just like that, you know, statistically is just totally true. But I just, for some reason, my anxiety disorder manifests as like, if I have the steering wheel, then I'm okay. If somebody else has the steering wheel, I don't know what's going on. If I can't, you know. But when did you witness a horrific crash? When did this happen?
Adam and I were driving up to, I think it was Melanie Westcott's wedding, and we had, you know, the kids with us, and it was this car like clipped another, like a big vehicle, and then like went across like 5 or 6 lanes and hit a bunch of cars, and person in the front seat was just like, and like we had a bunch of little kids with us, so we were at the very tail end, so we missed getting hit, but we just kind of like, the kids were like, what's going on? We like kept going, and there was a bunch of people who had stopped, and anyway, so
wow.
Yeah.
Wow, I don't think I knew that story. Who was driving? You and I once were driving to a basketball game at the Huntsman Center, a U of U basketball game. Were you driving the Honda Accord when we got slammed into the median on the freeway?
Well, that wasn't a basketball game. Well, actually, yeah, we were going to a basketball. Yes, and Mom and Dad were out of town.
Yeah,
and somebody ran into us. So
yeah. So
that's the only car accident I've ever been in, and they hit us. So.
I think I've been in scarier car accidents than that. And I, for whatever reason, my brain is like, if I have the steering wheel, then I have a chance. I have a shot, you know? Anyway. Okay. Showing emotion. This is all, I think, related to sort of where the roots of where this stuff comes from, that a lot of stuff for people just comes from childhood. It comes from, we talked about testosterone and chemicals. I just want to ask, you know, going about my methodology of collecting anecdotal data and stuff. Do you know when the last time you cried was?
Yeah. I would say before these times, like, it probably had been like years. Like, I'm very similar to your friend. Like, I do not cry very often at all. Like, rarely, if ever. Like, I don't even know if my wife has seen me cry 10 times in our entire marriage.
Wow.
But we were talking about religion recently, and it wasn't a long bout with crying, but I did start crying about something. And then my friends, I hadn't thought about this, but now that you brought it up, it just came to me. My friend's father passed away. It was like 2.5 months ago, and he was always very good to me. When I found out that happened, I started crying. So
appropriate reaction. Yeah.
Yeah.
And do you think that was, so the more recent time was kind of maybe a spiritual experience talking about your beliefs and your religion. And then before that, the death of someone who's important to you.
Yeah.
And those are, of course, you know, very understandable responses. How often, so you did say that, you know, I mean, like in 17 years that you've been married, your wife's maybe seen you cry 10 times. Do you think that you're crying? It sounds like maybe you are more regularly now. Could you guess how often you're crying on like a month-to-month basis?
Oh, I don't cry. Like that. This is not like a thing that you're like, oh, when do you cry? I'm like, I don't cry.
No, I know. Yeah. Yeah.
If you're wanting to know on a month, like I would say like maybe once a year or something. Like I don't know.
See, and I was, even when I was going around, you know, a few years ago asking all my friends this question, I was recognizing that like, I think I cry more than most of the men that I know. I cry. Right now I'm crying so much. Like I've been having a lot of really bad anxiety and everything's making me cry. Like everything's, so songs are making me cry and TV shows. And I'm crying like 3 or 4 times a week right now, which is a lot. But usually I cry like a few times a month, probably like three or four times a month.
No, and it's not like I'm not having an emotional experience. Like for example, like at Lizzie's play, like you were crying at the end for sure. Like you were like losing it. I wasn't not like, I was absolutely having an emotional experience, but like, I just had a huge smile on my face. Like I was just full of joy.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying you can't have joy crying, but like, that was my reaction is I was just smiling very, you know, I had a big smile on my face. So.
Which is also a lovely response. What's in your life, what's the most emotional you think you've ever gotten? Like what's the hardest you've ever cried in your life?
I
think you cry so infrequently that I have in my mind the most I've ever think I seen.
Oh yeah. Actually, now that you're saying it,
do you know what it is?
You're going to say when I left my girlfriend, going on my mission.
That's exactly what I was. It was that and our dog. It was
very like, you know, that was unplanned and I didn't know what was going to happen there. And I mean, I think
isn't that crazy
probably
that we
for both of us, we probably were thinking like, this is probably goodbye. Like I feel like I had a very rational approach to the fact that I was leaving for 2 years and yeah, this probably isn't going to work out. A lot of my friends were just like, oh, what if she doesn't wait for me? I'm like, well, she's probably not going to. Like, it's 2 years. That's a long time. So I think that's what that was, is like, not only was it like we're saying goodbye, but it literally was like, we're done. Like, we're – even though we, like, kept – you know, we talked and we wrote letters to each other. It was kind of like, this is it, you know?
Again,
and same thing with the dog as well. I was like, I don't know if she'll be alive when I get home, you know? So,
right. Again, for my listeners, there are people in the audience who are new to this show or new to my channel. I was raised in Sandy, Utah. My family's LDS. And LDS men, when they, it used to be 19, now it's 18, they go on a 2-year mission. I didn't do it. I'm the only boy in my family that didn't do it. I'm the bad one. I'm the black sheep of the family. But my brother went on a 2-year mission to the Philippines when he was 19. And it's interesting to me that we both, I said, I know what it is. And you knew exactly what I was talking about. That's how rare.
Because you said that, but then I was like, yeah, actually, yeah.
Yeah. But that's how rare it is for you to like really break down like that, that we both could pick that up, you know, like, oh yeah, it's that time. Okay. A few more questions about this. And then I think we can start getting into like some details about like why this is, even for the thing of like, you see me at your daughter's play, I'm emotional. There's something about watching kids do theater. I like when I went and watched Kira's plays in high school and watched these, just watching high school kids do theater and like remembering the experience of that, like how passionate kids are at that age, and watching your daughter be the lead in her school play and everything. I get very emotional watching kids perform. How do you feel when other people around you are getting emotional and crying? You talked about early on in your marriage, leaving the room when your wife would cry. Is there anything in you that feels uncomfortable at people expressing emotion, or do you feel a different way about like men expressing emotion versus women expressing emotion, or adults expressing emotion versus kids expressing emotion? How does that feel for you when other people are doing it?
I'm not uncomfortable. I think one of the things that you and I spoke about is, I think sometimes one of my reactions is like, do you really have to cry every time? Like, it's like, is that like, and like, seriously, like I want like anybody who's listening, like, I know I sound like a dick. Like, I'm not trying to be a jerk. Like, I'm trying to tell you, these are my reactions. I know I'm not correct. I'm trying to be better. But like, yes, the skeptic in me is kind of like, seriously, like every time, but that's where like, it is like, it is a different emotional response for people. Like cause that's the thing as well. Like, that's what I was saying, like about the play as well. Like, I'm not, I am emotional. Like it was a very emotional night to sit and watch Lizzie be the lead of her school play. It was probably one of the coolest, proudest, you know, joyous moments of my life. But I didn't cry. Like, I'm not saying you were wrong to cry, but that just wasn't the emotion that came to me. So
you're right. Yeah, totally. I think it's so, okay, that thing right there, because we have talked about that, of like when people are emotional regularly, and I actually relate to this sometimes, this thing of like when you know someone who just like, you have a friend, you're in a relationship with somebody, or someone in your family that like at every significant moment, every thing on the TV, anytime they're upset about anything, it's immediate tears. That thing of like, oh my God, we're doing it again? Really? Like this reaction again? So I guess the question there is, in your mind, does emotion being elevated to the level of tears, like there's some kind of value being placed on, like if you're emotional enough that it raises to the level of expelling tears, do you feel like a person doing that too often devalues it and takes away the significance of it, takes away the weight of it in any way?
I have wondered that, and I don't,
yeah.
Again, I'm not saying that that's correct yeah. in any way, shape or form. But yes, like sometimes I'm like, that's what I mean when it comes to like the seriously again, like it's almost like I can't be like it, which one is an emotional experience? Cause like something that like, yeah. Sure. I'm like, wow, that's moving. But it's like, oh, you're like, you're moved to tears. Like you're like full blown crying. So anyway.
Well, and this is not a conversation where I want you to feel like in any way, like you're experience with emotion is under a microscope or being judged. Because I think the thing that's interesting about this conversation is like, everything in life is spectral, right? And everything exists on a spectrum, and people fall on different places of the spectrum. And I think that like judgment can come from both sides. So someone that's further on your side of the spectrum can look at people who are really easily moved to tears and go like, geez, like you have no barriers put in place for you. Like you will start crying at anything. And maybe it starts to feel a little like, is there any value to your emotion? And on the other side of the spectrum, people could look at someone like you and be like, yes. Are you a robot, man? Like what? Correct. Like what, you know? But it's judgment going both ways. And yes. The reality is there's not necessarily right or wrong with it. This is what fascinates me about this topic, is I think that like in a very generalized way, men and women tend to show emotion at different degrees of frequency and in different ways. And so this will happen in relationships a lot where like, you know, when a couple is fighting, the woman will start crying because the fight is moving her and that the frustration is expressed that way. And the man might start either shutting off or getting cold or like raising his voice and using like that mean dad voice. And both people are having the same experience of like having their emotions pushed to a level that is uncomfortable for them.
Yeah.
But it's getting expressed in different ways. And certainly, I mean, I've always felt like, boy, I wish that I cried more when I was frustrated and upset. And I wish I didn't get angry and say mean things. Because I think that the crying is a more sympathetic response. But it's just interesting the way that people express themselves.
I want to be perfectly clear, like why I keep like apologizing for like what my feeling, what, you know, how I feel about things at times or what I'm saying is what you and I are trying to get to. And, you know, the purpose of this topic, getting emotional with Anthony, is it is okay to be emotional and it is okay to express feelings. And I have been really bad at that at times. This is me trying to say, you know, it's a good thing. Good to be emotional. And, you know, one thing that I'd mention also, like, even though I don't cry often and everything, two of my favorite TV shows of all time are Parenthood and This Is Us. Anybody who's watched those shows, there is a lot of crying and there is a lot of emotion expressed in those shows. So obviously it hits me and I feel, you know, something, because I love those shows. And, you know, I do think part of it is because it, you know, it's very much in line with where I'm at in my life. Those shows, that, you know, the storyline and everything. But at the same time, yeah, I do dig the emotion as well. So.
Yeah, I'd always give This Is Us a hard time. I've never actually watched either show, and you and the family have been trying to get me to watch both of them forever. But my problem is every time I would be like home visiting mom and dad, there'd be like a promo for an episode of This Is Us, and it would be like, if you thought you cried last week on This Is Us, you've never cried like you're going to cry this week. It was like every episode was like, how do we make you cry harder than the episode before? And I was just like, is there ever an episode of This Is Us where they're not trying to be the saddest episode of the show so far? Or the most emotional episode of the show so far? Do they ever just have an episode where like everybody goes out for pizza and it's like a pretty mundane day with the family?
I mean, emotion, I wouldn't say they're all sad, but they, emotion is a big part of it. And the other thing is they're jumping around timelines all over the place. So they are like, the point of it is they're trying to like hit on important emotional moments in their lives. So.
Mm-hmm. Here's a question in that regard of like you acknowledging, of course, it's okay to be emotional. Of course, it's okay to show emotion, and that you acknowledge that like maybe the way that you've been closed off isn't perhaps the most healthy approach. Who knows? Like I said, it's spectral. Have you ever felt unfairly judged for the way that you're expressing emotion, because maybe the way that you're expressing it is by closing off, or it's in a way that's different from tears? Have you ever felt like the way that you show emotion is not properly understood or mischaracterized in any way?
I don't feel like this is like a huge issue, but yes, I mean, and I'm not blaming her, but like my wife did say like, how come you didn't, like, you really didn't cry? And I was just like, I just had a big smile on my face. Like I was having a great time at Lizzie's play, but like I just was smiling. That was my reaction. So.
Yeah, I think what I am fascinated about when this topic comes up is this specific thing, is like relationship dynamics, because I think this is when it comes into play the most. And again, I'm super generalizing here when I'm talking on in a binary of like men and women, that men are this way and women are this way, because everything this exists along a spectrum. You and I are both men, and we cry to varying degrees and different frequencies, and we express our emotions differently. So it's not this uniformal, you know, generalized statement that I'm going to say, but I do think that like in general, there's some sort of, there's probably a significant amount of chemical data to show that like the difference between estrogen and testosterone on how often you're crying and what your crying looks like for you. But this is why it's interesting to me, is that like in my relationships, I have had this experience of, you know, having a communication breakdown with somebody, being frustrated that the connection that we feel for each other feels like it's a little frayed, maybe. There's a little bit of distance in the relationship. We don't feel like we're hearing each other. This person that is the most important person to you in the world doesn't feel like they're hearing you, doesn't feel like they're taking in or respecting what you're saying, and they feel the same way about you. They feel like you're not hearing them and you're not responding the way that they want you to respond. Their response becomes tears and an emotion that's just like, you're hurting me, and I feel, you know, and it's sadness, and your emotion becomes you know, kind of like anger and cold and like, you know, maybe like sternness, you know, but it's the same, in both things it's like you're an adult man throwing a tantrum at that point. It's embarrassing and it doesn't feel good and it's not productive. And maybe you need to go outside and walk around the block to like shake it off or call someone to calm you down or something. But the other person, it's the same, you know, and what's interesting about talking about it being a spectrum to me is that I want to see if people could get to a place where both sides aren't passing judgment on the other. The yeah. side that has a hard time expressing emotion through tears isn't judging the other person for always crying. So it's not like, because I mean, I've heard this before too. I've had guy friends tell me, they're like, yeah, sometimes my wife or my girlfriend will look at me and be like, how are you not even fazed by the fact that I'm crying right now? Like, what you've done is making me cry. And they'll be like, yeah, but she cries every single day. So like, I don't know. It doesn't really affect me the same way that she wants it to, because I see her cry every single day. So that's one form of judgment. And then on the other side, it's like, how come every time this stuff breaks down, you get cold or you get mean or you know? And it's like, I wonder if we could have more empathy for the fact that we're both having similar experiences of we're feeling unheard, and it's linked to our childhood, like the way that we experience fear, the way that we experience frustration, and we're not really having empathy toward each other's experience. Now, obviously, I'm not talking about anger being elevated to the level of abuse or emotion being elevated to the level of emotional manipulation or abuse. You know, I'm not talking about these levels of like, hey, just be cool with the fact that your partner hits you sometimes when they get upset, or, you know, somebody who's utilizing emotion in a way to like be manipulative or controlling or coercive. And, you know, I'm not talking about that. I'm just talking about the basic fundamentals of like in relationships, sometimes there's conflict and sometimes there's that conflict is frustrating. What fascinates me about this topic is trying to create a sense of understanding for the other and the other experience, and knowing that just because a person is moved to tears easily doesn't mean that those tears are valueless. And just because someone else has a hard time crying doesn't mean that they're that they don't experience emotion. So the emotion you experienced watching your daughter perform was real, but it doesn't come out as tears. But that doesn't mean it's not real.
Well, no, this is great. I actually hadn't thought of it in that way. And that's another great takeaway from this. Cause you know, I'll use dad as an example. Like, he's a very emotional guy, and it's, you know, it's almost like it feels like almost every time we get together for a family get together, he gets emotional. And yes, I feel like at times I have had reactions of like, seriously, again, like it's like, we're, but I really like what you're saying is, just because he's getting emotional doesn't mean that like I have to like feel like pressure to like cry or like, you know, that I have to feel uncomfortable or anything. Like good for him. Like he's obviously feeling, you know, he's having an emotional experience and he loves the family. Like there's nothing wrong with that. That's great. So I love that what you just said there in terms of like both sides not judging each other. And yeah, kind of building a bridge there. So
I think that's why I like to talk about this, is to try to get to, because I really just genuinely believe the more you look into sociology and just, you know, psychotherapy, psychology, everything exists on a spectrum. Everything about human behavior exists on a spectrum. And I also, I wonder about that too, because our family does do this. We tend to, we're very, very fortunate in that we have a very close family dynamic. We all like each other, which is, we're a very big group, and somehow in a very big group that keeps getting bigger and expanding, bigger and bigger, we continue to get along and like each other. And so when we get together for holidays or when we get together for family get-togethers, or, you know, like dinners or birthdays or anniversaries, things like that, our father gets emotional. He's a man who is, and I think that he has continued to show more emotion the older that he's gotten. I think that in his life, he continues to get more and more emotional more frequently. But I think a lot of us get emotional, and oftentimes you're sort of the holdout. And I wonder if that, you just talked about like a pressure that like, do you feel like, oh, now everyone is going to think that I don't care about the family as much as everyone else because they're all crying and I'm not. And do you feel some kind of pressure or judgment in that?
Sure. But I guess what I would say about that is like, in my opinion, I think that, at times when people are put, you know, they have that predicament, is they kind of like want to make jokes. And I think maybe I've even done that in the past, but that's something that like, I'm trying more to not do that and like goof my way out of it. Just, you know, I can still be genuine. I can still say a heartfelt, emotional thing. I can say, I love you guys. But that doesn't mean I have to cry. And again, I'm not saying it's a bad thing. It's just, it's for me, like, that's not how I react to things. But that doesn't mean that I can't have an emotional experience. I can't say emotional things.
I just think that it's fascinating how the shame goes both ways. We just had somebody in the comments say, I am the easiest crier. This person's named CB. They said, I am the easiest crier. It's really embarrassing a lot of the time. People often think I'm experiencing emotions that I'm not. So again, I think that there's sort of this feeling of embarrassment or shame that can go both ways, where if you're a person who has a hard time expressing emotion, there can be a sense of embarrassment or shame because you feel like people aren't going to believe that your convictions are sincere. They're not going to take your emotions as seriously because they haven't been elevated to the level of tears. And inversely, if you're a person who cries all the time, you feel like no one's going to think that what I'm saying right now is like legitimate, because it's like a boy who cried wolf thing, where it's like, I'm doing this all the time, so nobody takes it seriously anymore. And people feel shame or embarrassment in both of those ways, directions. And I think that like, it's just such a like fundamentally human thing that it always stems from some kind of innate, you know, either learned or usually probably a learned or adopted fear of like being perceived in some way. You talked about how you felt like you needed to deal with issues strong. On. Yeah, you need to be strong. And so this feels like there's something. Go ahead.
Well, you know, but that's like, that's the other thing. Like, I want to express, like, just because like you're emotional or you're having a hard time, like, doesn't mean you're not strong. Like that's a misconception as well, is, you know, we're allowed to, you know, things are allowed to not be okay. And part of the, you know, I'm going to be strong, like, you know, I'm going to be somebody that people can rely on is, you know, sometimes I don't react in the most healthy way. Like sometimes I withdraw from people or I become a loner. And you know, these are the type of things, you know, especially with COVID, like where we weren't like talking to people and we weren't getting together. Like, my wife has to like, sometimes like sit me down and be like, hey, you're doing this stuff a lot. Like you need to stop doing that. Like, or you need to course correct. Cause I just don't think it's good for you. So.
Yeah. It's, that's really, really interesting. It's weird because I know I've experienced, I feel like I'm somewhere in the middle of this spectrum where I've experienced it both ways, where I've been in relational situations with people where like I feel like the tears are coming too often and way too easily and it starts to be devalued to me. And when that person cries, I start to wonder if the tears are legitimate or if it's something that they go to because they have easy access to it and it acts as like a trump card in whatever disagreement we're having. And I get fear about that and I get defensive about that. And also I cry often enough that sometimes I'll be in situations where I'm crying and someone else isn't, and they're giving me a weird look. And I'm like, no, I'm responding appropriately to this. You're not. I remember like I saw the movie Civil War and I went by myself and I was sitting in, it was like opening weekend. So the theater was packed and I was sitting in between two groups of friends and that weren't mine. And it was an IMAX theater. So it wasn't like one of these theaters with like a lot of space between seats. Those seats in the IMAX theaters, at least by my house, are tightly packed in there. And I felt really, really overwhelmed by the subject matter of the film. And kind of, I was surprised at how, I thought I was going to have to get up and leave. I thought I was going to have a panic attack. And I started like sobbing uncontrollably. And I just, the people on both sides of me, I could see them sort of looking over their shoulders. Like, is this guy okay? Like, holy crap. Like, dude, like what? But also I was like, are you not looking at what we're looking at? And then also my brain has to go, it's just a movie. It's just fake. It's not real imagery, but it's referencing real imagery and it really looks real and it's talking about something real. And I don't know. I think it's interesting how I can get defensive both directions about it, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. This person who made this comment earlier just said, I'm always worried that people will think I'm trying to manipulate them with tears. And I think that's definitely an insecurity for people who cry easily a lot, is that it's like, I'm not doing this to try to get you to do something, you know. But it is, it's like, it does feel, to me at least, like in an argument, in a conflict, a tearful response seems more sympathetic and more likely to win out than a stoic response, you know?
I thought you were going to say the getting loud and yelling. Cause
sure, getting loud, yelling.
I'm very similar to you with that. Is, yeah, my wife oftentimes have to say, why are you talking so loud? Like, just, you know, we're just having a conversation here. I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm just getting excited. I'm getting emotional. And that's, you know, when I talk about sports, like, especially if it's one of my teams, like, I get very – like people in the office used to tell me, like, you talk really loud when you talk about that stuff. I'm like, all right, well, the Jazz suck.
So. The Jazz suck. I don't know what you want me to do about it. I don't know how I'm expected to talk at a normal volume about how bad the Jazz are. Okay. That's so funny. That's a good question. Do you think now? I know my answer to this question. If the Jazz ever won a national championship, or if the Utah Utes ever won a national championship, do you think that you would cry?
I've thought about it, and I may very well, like, especially if the Jazz did. But I don't know. I do just think it'd be a lot of, you know, smiling and hugging and mosh pitting. Like, I mean,
I'd cry.
We've had our moments, you know, the Sugar Bowl and yeah. and those championships, like,
yeah.
And you know, we just hugged a lot and we did, you know, smiled a lot. So
those games are great. Yeah.
One thing I want to, like, I think this is something that my wife and I talked about in, when we were talking about leading up to this subject. And I want to talk about an example of, you know, inappropriate behavior and the wrong way to react to things. So, I like when it comes to sports fandom, I've had to tone it down significantly in terms of like, okay, if my team loses, they lose. Like, and I don't know if it's just because I'm getting older and like, I just don't have the time, the energy to invest or whatnot. But like, yeah, when they like, I'm just kind of like, if they lose, they lose. But this one year, like I felt like Utah basketball, like they had enough players. Like I just felt like they should win a championship and maybe even win the national championship. And
are you talking about like
three or four NBA players? But anyway, we went to a game and I thought this lady next to me was like mocking me. And I like was very rude and kind of said like, mind your own business or something. But like, I was very rude and like it upset and embarrassed my wife. And like, she really laid into me and was like, you are to never act that way ever again. Like that cannot happen. And like ever since then, like I've been like way better. Like not to say like I don't get emotional. Like, sure, I still do. I still get loud at times, but like I am able to control myself way more. And why I bring this up is like, this is where conversations and like maybe even people at times just telling you like, hey, that's not okay. Or like, why did you react that way? Like maybe, you know, maybe you could do this to be better. Like, those are healthy things. Like having this discussion, like I think it's great. So,
see, and this is a whole other thing that you and I could do a full episode on that I've always like wanted to talk to you about sports, but I'm very fascinated about this too. I think there is overlap here because I have to make sense in my own head of like why I enjoy sports so much, especially for the kind of guy I am. It always surprises my friends that I'm as into sports as I am because I have a lot of like feminine qualities and I, you know, I'm a big musical theater fan and like I'm a dancer and like most of my closest friends are women. And like, so like it's weird to everybody that I like sports as much as I do, but I always say like that's like the straightest thing that I do is I like sports and I, have sex with women. But those are like the two straightest things about me. But I always say that sports is like, it's like reality TV for men, for straight men. It's unscripted drama and we know all the characters and there's behind the scenes drama. There's stuff that people say about each other in the locker room and in interviews that we keep up on. But we also like, What's really interesting psychologically to me about sports is the way that we tie our identity to a specific organization, because it's not just watching the unscripted draw. Like right now I'm watching the NBA playoffs and my team that is tied to my identity is not involved. So there's not a lot at stake for me. I just get to watch as a fan of the sport of basketball. And I'm just interested to watch, you know, Luka Doncic play against Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. And, you know, like, and that's going to be like some good basketball. I would have preferred the Wolves and the Pacers, but that's because I'm a fan of a small market team. And so I always root for small market teams. But the fact that like you and I have our, there's something about, we've tied some aspect of our identity to the University of Utah and the Utah Jazz. It seems so illogical. It seems like it doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make any sense that we should actually get emotional about something that trivial. I think about it every year during college football season that like I am heavily invested in the lives of a bunch of 18 to 22 year old boys who don't know that I exist. And I'm just like so invested in their, like in what's going on in their lives. And I wonder if there's some thing about men, because it tends to be, again, generalizing, but men who seem to have a harder time accessing emotion in a certain way, or showing emotion, or wanting to be strong, that there's some, that maybe we've allowed ourselves, sports is the arena where we can go to a place and like scream, like yep. scream at the top of our lungs and let out some, you know, and we can like,
I think that's absolutely true. So
yeah, it's socially acceptable to be like, to really, and like we've decided societally that it's manly, even that it's like a manly expression of emotion to get to care about sports, you know, that it's gladiatorial. It's like watching men beat each other up in an arena, and you know, the stakes are very high. maybe it's not very healthy. I don't know.
I think it's what I say. You have to come to the realization of like, if my team loses, okay. Like it's, you have to realize like you have no control over that other than supporting the team and you know, being there, that obviously helps, for them to have a crowd and everything like that helps. But like, if they lose, they lose. Like it is what it is. And same if they win, like if they win, that's great. Like and you can have fun but it doesn't have to be like, oh, my team lost. Like I'm going to have a horrible day the next day. Like it just doesn't have to be that way.
So. Well, and especially for us, because we are fans of teams that will always lose. We have never watched them win the last game of the season. So I know the way that I've adjusted my sports fandom over the last several years, and I think it's been good for me, is I've just decided that I'm probably never going to see my team win the last game of the season. By which I mean the championship game. Sometimes, you know, the Utah Utes football team will win their bowl game, and that's their last game of the season.
They've won conference championships.
They've won conference championships. And what I have to do as a fan is just be glad that if my team wins more games than they lose, that's cool. If I'm lucky enough to get to go watch the team that I like play well, that's a good season for me as a fan. And I have to accept that, but that's the burden of being a small market fan is you have to sort of just go like, hey, a few years ago, the Jazz had the best record in the NBA and we were a very good team and we lost in the second round of the playoffs and that's fine. And, you know, we had a great season. It was a very entertaining, set a lot of franchise records, made a lot of three-pointers. It was a fun season of basketball, you know, but yeah, it is interesting that like that's a space where too often in my life, like I got my DUI almost 10 years ago, driving home from a University of Utah game. It was the game. This is like two. So what is this? Like 10 years ago, they're playing. You'll know this game. We were in a really, really good position to have like a really, really strong season and to win the conference, and we were playing down at Arizona State on the road, and Andy Phillips had been automatic Andy all year long and had not missed a field goal all year long. And he missed, I think, three field goals in the game, and we lost by 3 points. And it was like, if he could have just made any one of those field goals. Yep. And I got too drunk at the bar and I wound up in jail that night. And that's not an appropriate response to. No.
Yeah.
But do you remember that game? Do you know what the season I'm talking about?
Absolutely. Of course. I mean, our first season in the conference, same thing. We could have gone to the conference championship and the kid missed three field goals in the game. So,
yeah. Oh, boy. Anyway, I don't know if there's any kind of neither one of us are experts in this field. Neither one of us are sociologists or psychologists or therapists. I don't think that we're going to come to a conclusion. I think what fascinates me about this conversation, especially with you being my brother, and is just like I'm interested in probing into, you know, how different people express their emotions, why that might be, how we've been socialized to express our emotions differently as men and women, and seeing if we can create a little bit of like empathy and compassion for the way that we each experience these things differently. So I'm glad you brought this up.
And that's why I approached you about this, is I agree with you. Like, that's the whole point of this, is hopefully if anybody, you know, maybe feels like they can't, you know, express an emotion, or if they're struggling with somebody, something, you know, find somebody that you can talk to or whatnot, like that, it's a good response. And even with Real Salt Lake, like a cool story recently. So one of their players, his name's Diego Luna.
Diego Luna.
Yeah. So there's the Star Wars actor, and then there's a famous soccer player, but wow. The manager, the coach actually went to him and said, "Hey, something seems a little off with you. Like, are you okay?" And he reacted like, "Yeah, like I know I need to do this. Like he thought he was talking on the field, and he said, no, I'm not talking about play." He said, is everything okay with you? Like, I'm trying to talk to you. Like, are you okay?" And he actually, like, he started going to therapy after he talked to his coach, because the coach actually came to him and said, like, "I feel like something's off with you." And he did, like, local news segments about how that's really helped him in his life and how appreciative he is of the coach. He actually, like, the first goal that he had this year, he came off the bench and he came and he scored a goal. And then he went to the coach and he gave him a hug. And the guys on the announcers were like, "That's really odd, especially since he came off the bench. You think he'd be kind of upset with the coach?" And he said in his post-game comments, he said, "I actually started therapy this week, and it's because the coach came to me and said, like, you didn't seem like you were okay. Like, something was off with you." So
that's a good reminder that your friends that maybe don't express emotions outwardly as often, you can check in on them, and trying to find a way to be attuned to people who don't express emotion as tears or in a way that's as readily apparent or visible, you know, like it's not as obvious, and seeing if you can be attuned to what it looks like when that person might not be doing great. Bryce Rabbits just dropped in $1.99 in the super chat. Thank you so much, Bryce. You've always been a good pal. Appreciate you for that. Are you interested? I mean, we're wrapping up here, but is this something you're interested in, is trying to see if you can free yourself up more for certain modes of expression? Or do you think that it's all right that you express your emotion the way that you do? And, you know, I mean, like,
I think it's both. This was an effort of, you know, like I said, I know you had asked me about this several times, and I wanted to be able to, if we were going to do this, that we would actually do something that was meaningful. And I felt like had value. And not to say that, like, sports is fun and it does bring meaning to people's lives. But especially after, like I said, listening to Allison's, like, I did feel like there was something here, and it, you know, there was a discussion that we could have. So.
Great. I'm glad you brought it up, and I'm glad you wanted to come do this. Is there anything else you want to say on this topic before we wrap it up?
I mean, just like I said, that I do think expressing emotion is it's a healthy thing. And I love that you brought the side of, you know, there are both sides of the spectrum. And just because one person does it one way or the other person does it the other way doesn't make it right or wrong either way. And that we should respect each other's emotion. I hadn't even really thought of it in that way. So I really appreciate that you brought that up. So
cool. I'm glad this was useful for at least you. And hopefully it was useful for somebody in the audience too. Hopefully they could get something out of this. I really enjoyed talking with you about this for sure. It's one of my, you know, favorite conversations we've had in a while, even though I still love talking to you about sports. Are the Utes going to win the Big 12 in their first season in the Big 12?
I really hope so, because I think they're going to have a hard time competing with Ryan Smith University and other schools that have a lot of money. So,
yeah, I think they got a good shot. If they can stay healthy, if that team's healthy, then watch out, college football. But we might just have to be happy with like a 9-win season like we normally are. And that'll be great. You know, a 9 or a 10-win season would be lovely. All right, cool. Enjoy the game tonight. Have fun. I hope Real wins. Great talking with you. Love you very much. And thanks everybody for participating in the chat.
Love you too. Thanks, man.
Okay. See you later.
Okay. See you.
Well, that's my brother Anthony. Speaking of getting emotional, and speaking of Kevin Costner, there was a very viral clip and kind of viral moment around the internet from the Cannes Film Festival where Kevin premiered Horizon Part 1 and got like an 11-minute standing ovation after the film, and he was misty-eyed and emotional. And it's really interesting because he went on Jimmy Kimmel, and Jimmy Kimmel was like, "You cried. You were crying at the, you know," and he did this like tough guy Western Costner thing where he was like, "I didn't fucking cry. I didn't cry." Like he like denied it. And then on Armchair Expert, he did say, he goes, "You know what I did? I got emotional." And he goes, "And I saw myself on the," they had him on a big screen because they had a camera in his face, and then the feed to the camera was going up on the giant screen. He goes, "I looked at the giant screen and I saw that my eyes were full and welled up." And he goes, and he said, "I realized my son had probably never seen me like that." And I like, in that moment, it's like, whoa, like Kevin Costner's son's like, if he's talking about Hayes, he's like 15. And I was like, his son's never seen his eyes well up. And I don't know. It's a tie in bringing it back to what me and my brother were just talking about. Different people show emotion in different ways and at different times and from different things. Different things make different people emotional. And yeah, I definitely don't think that we unraveled the mystery of it or solved anything, but hopefully we did create some curiosity, some compassion around the subject, some empathy. That's it. That's the whole thing. Horizon comes out this month, June 28th, Horizon Part 1. I show up, I think, I haven't seen the movie, but my feeling based on the screenplay is that my character shows up near the end of Part 1, and then I'm in more of Part 2, which comes out August 16th. Yeah, okay, I'm gonna go live my life now, all right? People Pleaser is written, edited, hosted, and produced by me, Austin Archer, with original theme music also by me. You can find more of my music by going to austin-archer.com, austinarchermusic.bandcamp.com, or by searching Austin Archer on Spotify or Apple Music. Yeah, patreon.com/austinarcher. Let people know about this podcast. Let people know about the things. Share it with people. Patreon.com/Austin Archer if you want to support it. Love to all the patrons. Y'all are the best people in the world. Thank you for your continued support. Thank you for keeping everything I do afloat. Okay. That's it. We'll see you next time. Take care of each other. Take care of yourselves. Bye-bye.